and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Thanks for being with us. As always, my guest is Mayor Tony Rozworski of Lafayette. We'd love to have your questions for him in the next half an hour. Call those in to 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Happy New Year. Good to see you.
You too, Stan. Thanks for having me.
Are you a New Year's resolution kind of mayor?
Not really. Not too much. I have been working out. I'm going to continue to do that, but that's been something that's going on. So now I think you got a plan kind of for all year and stick to that plan, and that's what we're going to do. So not too much on that.
Are there any new issues that are on your radar as 2018 begins that might take up more of your time than they did in the year past?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, actually, as you probably saw, 2018 for us is going to be a year of actually completing some really large projects like Sagamore Parkway, the Brown Street Interceptor Sewer Project, the Mark Building, the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation's Promenade project. So we're going to actually get some really big projects completed in 2018, and then probably, you know, and even do some early action items then to get started on the new baseball stadium. And probably one of the big things we haven't talked too much about yet is, as some of these other projects are finishing up, we're going to begin to go through the process of hiring an engineering firm to design the final phase of Park East Boulevard. As you know, Park East Boulevard dead ends now into McCarty Lane, and we're going to build that section from McCarty Lane all the way over to State Road 38, and that'll be another big piece for us of roadway run parallel with obviously Sagamore Parkway, Creasy Lane, parts of Veterans. So it'll create another important traffic corridor, but more importantly, it begins to open up that ground that we've master planned working with Tippecanoe County, what we call the Alexander Ross and the Berlowitz watersheds out east of town there. Getting that next phase of road, we think, will be significant in helping create some new development opportunities here in the greater Lafayette community.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit about a meeting that's coming up later this month. Your city is going to have a meeting that talks about the drug problems in the area, that you're allowing people to speak. And it's been so popular that you actually had to change the venue so that you could accommodate more people in the audience. What did the mere fact of having to do that say to you about people's interest in this topic and people's want to contribute their own voices to the ongoing discussion?
Sure. Well, man, I obviously think that's a good thing. You know, we've talked on your program before and others that, you know, getting people involved, getting community members involved in helping the police department be in our eyes and ears out there, bringing information to us, helping us find solutions, partnering with us, bringing us information, whether it's about a drug issue or other issues that we may not have, is incredibly important. And so I think it's a very positive sign. We want to hear from people, and we want also people to get, you know, educated about what we're seeing from the law enforcement side. And I'm sure we're going to hear some very personal stories too, probably before the night's over with. So I'm hoping for a great dialogue back and forth with individuals. And, you know, if we end up having to turn people away, then we'll certainly schedule another meeting. And I hope, and we will continue to do additional meetings anyway that talk about this topic and others. I know you follow. We do a lot of community outreach through our training center, a lot of different meetings on a lot of different topics. But this is an important one right now. And so
I was going to ask about that, actually, because it seems like there are more people who want to speak than will be offered the opportunity in this first limited forum. It seems like the kind of thing that is ripe for having a series of ongoing community conversations.
Yeah, I think that's probably a very good point. You know, we'll be able to position, I think, to do this. If you go back just a couple years ago when we talked about our initiatives that we had for helping look at public safety in the community, everything from the additional officers we were going to hire to the take-home vehicle program to what we were doing with our street crimes unit, our drug task force. The other big piece that we talked about that was the crime prevention community outreach department that we talked about creating. And so over the last couple years, you know, we've worked very hard now at that department and that division. And that division now has four people in it, has a lieutenant, sergeant, and two technicians. Having that manpower in that division now gives us the resources to actually host all these additional classes, begin to host these meetings. These people, these folks are out at, these officers are out at neighborhood association meetings. They're out in our parks. They're doing a lot of outreach. They're also doing a lot of crime prevention and meetings like this. And now having all four of those people in there, which was, you remember, part of that initial initiative, because we know that community engagement, that community involvement, the feedback, the dialogue, the open communication is incredibly important. And with four people in there now, you're going to see us be able to do more and more things like this.
So what does the city need to hear? What do you or the police chief need to hear at this initial meeting? What information could the public provide to you that you either don't already have or maybe you don't have enough of? What would be useful in terms of helping to form the city's ongoing drug combating efforts?
Well, I think a couple things, you know, come to mind. One, I think it will be important for us to hear how much the folks that are there, and they may know quite a bit because they're being engaged enough to come, actually know about the drug issues in the community, from the use of synthetic marijuana to the use of opioids to the use of heroin. You know, how much do people really know, and what does it take to actually build a criminal case? What can they do to help? Are they really aware of how drugs come into the community? So I think part of it will be just to see, as a kind of a sample group from this group, you know, how much do people really understand about the drug issue, about and what it takes to fight it from a law enforcement side. And then also, you know, I'd personally like to hear also those personal stories that talk about what the city might be able to do or how we might be able to collaborate. Obviously, we're not a medical group, but how we can collaborate and help push on treatment, how we can help push on education. Is there a way we can play a part in the education component that will help people not get addicted to these drugs, you know, particularly the opioids? We know there's been a lot of legislations passed here in the last session. There's more being looked at on how they can be prescribed, how many of them you can get, what it takes for a doctor to do. And then, you know, really getting some of the medical community on board voluntarily to look at how they're prescribing practices, and to really everybody participate in helping track those opioids, track those opioid users. And so are there things that we can do as a community to help push that agenda, play a role in treatment, education, items like that? So I think that's important. And then the other piece that we, you know, continually talk about, and as you well know, we're on Nextdoor. We're up to over 25% of all households in Lafayette now participate in Nextdoor. So we want to, again, have this opportunity to stress with those folks that you need to be our eyes and ears. And if there's things that you can report to us, please don't hesitate. Look for these types of things and just continue that engagement. I think the meeting, you know, I don't know that we'll get everything out of it the first go around here for us or for the people attend, but I think we'll all get something from it. I think we'll learn from it, learn maybe what the next format should look like and how it should be structured. And, I mean, you just can't communicate too much on an issue like this.
It sounds a little to me like you believe there might be some misconceptions among the public that could be cleared up through conversations like this. It sounded like you were kind of dodging around the edges of saying, well, there are some things that people may need to know a little bit more about. Is that true?
Well, I don't know if I was actually dodging around the edges. I think where a lot of things with law enforcement, sometimes the community does not fully understand what police officers can and can't do, how long it takes to build a case, what type of evidence have to be gathered, what type of paperwork and documentation need to be in place to ensure that you have a case that the prosecutor will be willing to file formal charges on and that you, if necessary, can take to a jury and win that case. So I think, you know, that's why we run our Citizens Police Academy on a regular basis. That's why we started our youth police academy, to continue to educate people, because the more they know about what our police department can and can't do, what our operations are, the better they'll be equipped to help us and to help make decisions. So I think those types of opportunities are always important, whether it relates just to the drug issue or other issues of public safety in the community.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and today we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Call in your questions. 496-1999 is the telephone number. Email ask@wbaa.org. and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, to change topics, we're supposed to get some more wintry weather here in the next couple of days, perhaps as early as this evening. That could lead to some more snow and ice on the streets. And I noticed that when the first significant snowstorm of this season hit right around Christmas Eve, there were a number of side streets that got plowed, but there was still snow cover and ice in some cases on a bunch of the side streets. The main thoroughfares were in good shape, but the side streets a little bit less so. And I wanted to understand a little bit better why that was the case.
Well, I mean, you know, when we look at snow removal, first of all, I want to commend our guys. I've got, and ladies, many, many, many compliments on the quality of the snow removal here in the city of Lafayette. And when people move here from other places, they can't believe the way that we plow snow. So I certainly want to thank everybody for that. What happens with the side streets sometimes, well, obviously we do the thoroughfares and the mains first, and we make sure what we get them open really well. Then we go into what we call secondary streets, and then we go into the neighborhood streets, and then we go into the courts. So what happens a lot of time is, one, those side streets are a lot harder to plow because there's cars a lot of times parked on both sides of the street, and pickup trucks who don't get the snow up quite as well as the larger trucks have to wind their way down through cars. We drop the salt, but a lot of those streets too, they don't get the same amount of sunshine on them based on just trees and the angle of the roads, and so they don't have that continual traffic volume either that helps really work that up and helps grind the salt in or the sand in to make it work. So the side streets are always a little bit tougher for us. But, you know, traditionally what happens too is we get some snow. It doesn't go to 17 below zero within 2 days, or then 13 below zero and then 9 below zero. We usually get a day where it gets back up at least in the teens or the 20s where that salt, or we can go back and put some new salt on and it will actually work. You know, 17, 20 below zero, 13 below zero, that salt doesn't work very well. In fact, you probably saw on some of the streets, the hills, when it got that cold, we started cutting the salt, what we call cutting, with sand. We needed something with more grit to it that could grind in a little bit better and wasn't so temperature sensitive. So we started mixing the salt with the sand to try to grind some of that up. So there's a couple factors, but a lot of it has to do just with, at those, what literally was record-breaking low temperatures. At some point, that salt and stuff just doesn't work very well till it warms back up, and then we got to try to hit it again.
What about the issue of pre-treating? There are a lot of cities that will go and lay salt down before any snow or ice begins to fall. I don't see as much of that in Lafayette, except on maybe a few of the main roads. You'll see, you know, the streaks that are left behind from the brine mixture being laid down.
Yeah, we pre-treat. We do brine mixture. We do mostly the thoroughfares and the larger roads. Part of that is time. I mean, you can't put that stuff down too early, or it won't be effective by the time the snow gets here. And so you've got to kind of time that and what you can get done and still make it effective before the snow gets here. So we do some of the side streets, but I mean, not all of them. I'm not going to tell you that we do, but we'll continue. We think that we do that in a smart way. You know, we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on snow removal, and I think we do an excellent job of it. But you also have to, you know, be conscious of what you're doing, how much money you're spending, making sure it's a long winter, that everything's in good shape. And then the other part of it is, too, is how you balance that manpower. The people that plow snow are the same exact people that pick up the trash, your leaves, your limbs, your large items. They're the guys and gals that work down at the wastewater, our Renew plant, the water department. They do the south end of town. The water department does the north end of town. The street department does the middle. The parks department does the trails, other sidewalks, helps with the parking garages and things like that. So literally, fleet maintenance is working on the vehicles. TID helps plow certain areas and does certain trails. So literally, and I think that's part of the reason why our snow removal is so effective, every department that has trucks in the city of Lafayette basically drops what they're doing and helps plow snow when it snows. But with that being said, we still need to pump water every day for people to drink. We need to clean that water down at the wastewater treatment plant.
So let me ask you about this, because your city is one that has grown not just in size, but in scope and in physical area quite a bit in the mm-hmm. last 20 years or so. And have you been able to keep up with having the manpower you need, having the number of trucks you need to be able to cover what is a considerably larger physical footprint of the city of Lafayette over that time?
Yeah, we have added people, but I'll give you a lot of credit, not a lot. We have used technology. We have redesigned our routes. We look at the way we set up our shifts. And for a long time, you know, we have grown. We took in annexation, and we really didn't have to add too many people. There was a time when we were using four less people at the street department than they used prior to me becoming the mayor, because we had found ways to be more efficient with it. Now, as we've continued to grow and the population has really started to grow, yes, we've added people at the wastewater treatment plant. We've added a few people at water, not too many. We added people in street, and we are going to add a new trash crew and a new large item crew and a new cardboard person at the street department in 2018 to help keep up with everything. We've had a lot of new houses built out in the south end of town that require trash pickup. But again, I'll give Dan Kroll, Carrie Smith, Brad Talley, guys that run those departments. I mean, for as much as the city's grown, they have not added that many people. And
well, no, but I'm saying that might actually be a bad thing,
yeah,
because you might need more trucks than you currently have on the streets.
I don't think we really do. I think we've got the right amount of trucks.
I think the people who had snow-covered streets might disagree with you.
Well, I don't know. I didn't get one complaint on snow removal. All I got was compliments. I personally did not get one complaint on snow removal. And so, because I think people like the tax rate here, and I think they like the way we manage our money. They like the way that we've been able to, that we have a rainy day fund that's the appropriate size but not too big. They like the fact that our bond rating has went up. They like the fact that we're not in financial difficulties. They like the fact that we're hiring 6 policemen this year to add to the police department to take care of their most important issue, which is public safety.
And saying any of those other things aren't being taken care of, but looking at it on an individual basis.
But to answer your question, you need to let me answer. You said you think they might be worried about that. I think most people realize when they look at the totality of the city services, they look at the totality of the tax rate, they look at the totality of the way we've managed our money and created economic development and new jobs and being able to put in roads when we need to get the GE plan here, help Subaru expand and those things.
All of that is true, but some part of local government, you have to agree, is what have you done for me lately? And in the midst of a winter where we're getting more precipitation than has been the case in the last few winters, I think that what have you done for me lately rises a little bit to the top.
Well, it might be for you personally, but I'm not getting that complaint from the citizens as a whole. So if there's somebody that's not happy with snow removal, they know how to get a hold of me. I'm in the gas stations, the grocery store. I'm at City Hall every day. It's really not hard for people to get a hold of me. So I don't want to be argumentative, but I'm also going to stand my ground. I think if people were very disappointed with snow removal and had mass areas where people felt that they didn't get adequate snow removal and were not happy with city services, I think I would have heard about it more than I have.
On to other things, your city council has gone through the first of a couple of votes that would require anyone listing their house on an online rental service like Airbnb to pay a $100 registration fee. Why do you think that's necessary?
Well, we're going to ask people to register those homes, and that's help us cover the cost of that registration process, us checking then to make sure that the zoning lines up with the ordinance. As you know, we passed an ordinance that allows different activities and different zoning classifications for different periods, and to make sure that people are in those right for what they want to do, that they're in those right zoning. We're not going to go out and personally try to check, knock on people's door, but we do want to track what zones people are in, and if we do get a complaint, then obviously we'll follow up on that complaint. But that's a way of us getting started to understand where those are at and to make sure that people are following that ordinance and those zoning classifications are being monitored correctly.
You don't think that that zoning change and that this ordinance might be construed as government overreach of the sort of free market?
No, absolutely not. I went down and testified before the committee down at the State House earlier in the year and told them what we were doing in Lafayette because they wanted to hear, because they felt the direction that we were going compared to what some other communities were talking about was actually a very practical, common sense approach that they felt they could incorporate, looking at some state legislation. They really were looking at us as the model because they thought we found a good balance with property rights, but yet protecting R1 neighborhoods particularly, so the people that live by Airbnbs also don't have their property values diminished and too much commercialization in a residential neighborhood. In fact, the lady that's in charge of Airbnb for the state of Indiana, when I got done testifying, stopped me in the hallway, shook my hand, said, "Mayor, great job. We're not even against what you just said. That's common sense, practical application. We know you need concerned about your neighborhoods, and that's not even something we're concerned about." And we shook hands and I left.
Commercialization in the neighborhoods, that's an interesting idea, because I think in a lot of cases people wouldn't even know that there was an Airbnb on their block. It's not like there's a sign out front in most cases.
Yeah, but that's absolutely false and incorrect, and that's what started us with our legislation, which our ordinance was people in the Chatham Square neighborhood, when two houses sold right there in their neighborhood, absolutely knew there was something going on because they were being rented for parties. They were re-rented just for weekends. There were people running through the neighborhood, running through the streets, and they absolutely knew that there was something going on, and that's why they called me that got us started looking at this and what we needed to do, particularly in R1 neighborhoods, to ensure that, you know, just like other ordinances, that other people that aren't going to operate an Airbnb doesn't somehow have their property values diminished, particularly for people who buy them and don't live in them. And that's what we mostly regulated, that people that bought them strictly for investments, they don't live there. Some cases, they don't live in Lafayette, even in Indiana.
The same thing is true of a lot of landlords, we should say.
Right. And we do... I wish we could even have a rental inspection program. We can't. West Lafayette does. We didn't have one in time and weren't grandfathered in. But we do have other ordinances that help, that pertain to rental properties and personal property that we enforce, all based on the thought we need to make sure in our neighborhoods that there is a high quality of life, and that requires some level of regulation. And I can tell you that most people agree with that, because you get a bad neighbor, you get a bad landlord, you get a bad somebody doing something with a property, the first people they call is the city, and they want it taken care of, and we have to have things in place to be able to do that. And again, like I said, the lady that's the president of Airbnb from Indiana looked me right in the eye and said, "Mayor, good job on your testimony," and that's something we're fine with. We wouldn't even fight that.
Want to get to one or two other things in our last few minutes. I've talked a little with Mayor Barton about what he hopes that Crawfordsville is going to get from the nearly $40 million the Lilly Endowment is giving this Wabash Heartland Innovation Network. And I wanted to know, what do you want Lafayette to get out of it?
Well, I think, you know, I don't really boil it down directly to what Lafayette can get out of it. If you look at the grant itself, and if you look at what Lilly is talking about, it really is promoting the region. It really is promoting that multi-county area. How can we all work together through the use of advanced manufacturing, new sensors, new technology, the Internet of Things, data collection, the use of data to help perpetuate innovation and creativity, make our existing businesses more profitable, more globally competitive, and also help new businesses start up and grow. And through that use of technology, the Internet of Things, how can we really build this whole region that we call the Wabash Heartland Innovation Network and build that whole region? And so, you know, what role I'll play, and there really are their own separate group, what role I'll play, and I know what their role is to look at how we do that as a region. And so, you know, we'll look to be building those relationships, and how what we're doing here in Lafayette and West Lafayette, what they're doing in Crawfordsville and other communities, how we blend that so everybody can win, because some things might be a good fit for Lafayette or Purdue, and other things might not be. It might be a better fit for Crawfordsville or some of the other communities. So
Let me ask you a little bit about that, because that's one of the concerns that Mayor Barton has had. Is he said, you know, in Crawfordsville, we're going to have to look a little bit harder to try and find any obvious benefit for our city because we don't have the big manufacturing that, say, a Lafayette does. And I talked with President Daniels when he and I chatted, and he said that, you know, he was excited that a lot of the money was going to get funneled through Purdue to try and do a lot of the research and development here. And so it struck me that maybe there's a lot of obvious benefit for Purdue and for West Lafayette, but trying to get it out to the entirety of this 10-county region, that might be something that you and other mayors and county councils are really going to have to push for to keep it from being a West Lafayette Purdue-centric money thing.
Well, I think, you know, all things like that take work and take planning and take people working together. But I think what is different about this is when you look at the Internet of Things, when you look at data collection, when you look at the sensors that are being developed here at Purdue, and you look at how they can be applied, particularly in agriculture, other small businesses, whether advanced manufacturing, other entrepreneurship opportunities. The reality is, you know, that can happen at Purdue, that can happen in Lafayette, or that can happen in Crawfordsville and even in the rural communities that are based on, highly based on agricultural economies, because a lot of the data and the sensor work actually have agricultural applications. And so I think that's what makes this really interesting, that we can try to approach this from several different economic fronts that do allow larger, smaller economic benefit, educational institutions to all play a role and all have a benefit. Now, I don't think anybody lives in a glass bubble where they think that benefit is somehow going to be perfectly spread out through each entity involved. That's just not realistic. But I'm a half full guy on, you know, I see the glass half full. I honestly, when I look at the agricultural applications, small business applications, potential supplier, T1, T2 suppliers, different things that don't even have to be right in Lafayette or may have a finger in the agricultural world, those don't all have to be located in larger communities. And I think there is a way that I really do believe everybody can win from this, large and small.
One more last topic that's fairly local to downtown. I noticed that there are a couple of new restaurants downtown, one a fancy kind of ramen noodle place, one that's serving French cuisine. And I got to thinking about a story that our reporter Sarah Fenton did a couple of years ago about a couple of adventurous restaurant ventures having to go under because they weren't making money. And I wondered, you know, there's a lot of bars, diners, brew pubs, things like that in downtown Lafayette. So there's a lot of kind of sameness in the way in the cuisine that's down there. It's easy to get a pizza and a beer. It's not as easy to get kind of worldly cuisine like you'd have in a downtown Bloomington or something like that. Is there anything the city can do to keep from what happened to Heirloom or Restoration or places like that? And Restoration's a little bit different story because of the pipes bursting and all that. But that you can do farm to table, you can do adventuresome international cuisine. Anything the city can do to kind of spread out the culinary options?
Well, I mean, obviously that's private business, but I think that's actually happening on its own with just some of the things that you just talked about today with some of the other new restaurants that open. Of course, you have the Bistro, and I think there are quite a few options. And when you look at Lafayette, West Lafayette combined, I think there's a lot of options, and that's the way we really look at it. You know, we're using the river to unite the two communities. We're trying to create different access points and pedestrian crossways to give people all those different options on both sides of the river. And I think as we continue to grow, you'll see that. You know, right now in West Lafayette, there's a lot of new buildings going up. In Lafayette, we have the Mart going up. We have the old Journal and Courier building that's under renovation right now for people to live downtown. We have the new Brownstone going up on 4th Street and some other potential developments that we're talking about to people. And I think as you continue to see those developments happen, that'll continue to spread that base out and make it profitable for those to be there. I haven't been to Bloomington in a long time, but I'd measure our downtown with theirs any day.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We appreciate it. And we'll do it again next month. This has been our program, Ask the Mayor, here on WBAA. Remember to tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and find all of these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.